Welcome to the Immeasurable Podcast at the Krishnamurti Center in Ojai, California. This series reflects upon Krishnamurti's work and how it directly impacts the listener. The invitation is to inquire together into the fundamental nature of our existence.
This is the 11th dialogue between Jay Krishnamurti and David Bohm at Brockwood Park, 1980.
Dr. Bohman started these dialogues between himself and myself at Ojai in California, the beginning of this year. And we had 8 dialogues there and 2 here, if I remember rightly. So we had altogether 10 dialogues this year with Dr. Bohman and I. And so we are continuing that dialogue. We talked about, rather difficult to remember, I have no memory of it, so it's rather... I think we asked, if I remember rightly, what is the origin of all this, of all human movement? Is there an original source, a ground? That's right, sir.
That's right.
A ground from which all this sprang, nature, man, the whole universe. Was it bound by time? Was it in itself complete order? And beyond which there is nothing more. And Dr. Bohm reminded me yesterday, we talked about order, whether the universe is based on time at all. I don't know if you're interested in all this. And whether man can ever comprehend and live in that supreme order. That's right, sir. I think that's rather vaguely where we stopped. I don't know if you're interested in all this. But Dr. Bohm and I wanted to investigate, not merely intellectually, but also profoundly, how to comprehend or live from that ground, move from that ground. The ground that is timeless, that there is nothing beyond it. And I think we'd better begin from there. Huh?
Begin from the ground.
So I don't know if you would agree as a scientist of eminence whether there is such a ground, whether man can ever comprehend it, live in it. Live in the sense not as something he living in it, but that living in it, that itself living. And whether we can, as human beings, come to that. That is more or less, if I remember what we talked about.
Yes, well, I don't know if science as it is now constituted can say much about that.
Science doesn't talk about it.
But
you as a scientist, would you give your mind to the investigation of that?
Yes, well, I think implicitly science has always been concerned with trying to come to this ground. We discussed in Ojai studying matter to the greatest possible depth. But of course, that is not enough.
Is this too abstract?
It's hard to say.
Didn't we ask, sir, if we remember rightly, it's so long ago, as a human being living in this world which is such in turmoil, whether there can be that absolute order first, as the universe is an absolute order, and comprehend an order which is universal.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm making my question clear. I can have order in myself by careful observation, self-study, self-investigation, and understand the nature of disorder, and the very understanding, the very insight of it dispels that disorder. And that's one level of order.
Yes, well, that's the level that most of us have been concerned with until now. You see that we see this disorder going on in the world and in ourselves, and we say it is necessary to be aware, observe all that, to be aware of it, and as you say, to dispel
but
it.
But that's very, very small affair.
Yeah, well, we discussed that in Ojai, but I feel that, you know, people generally don't feel it as a small affair. We've discussed it at great length, but at first people feel that clearing up the disorder in themselves and the world would be a very big thing, and perhaps all that's necessary.
No, but, I mean, fairly intelligent and knowledgeable and fairly cultured human being, cultured in this sense, civilized. He can, with great deal of inquiry and investigation, come to the point when in himself he can bring order.
Yes, and then some people would now begin to say, if only we could bring that order into the whole of society.
We will. If all of us in this room, if we're all tremendously in that inward sense orderly, we perhaps create a new society. But that, again, is a very small affair.
Yes, well, I understand that. I feel that, you know, one should go into it carefully because it is not, you know, people commonly don't see it as small, although a few have, you know, in seeing that there's something much beyond that.
Much more beyond that. That's what I want. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if others are following this.
Perhaps a thing would... What might be worth thinking about would be why is it that it is not enough to go into this order of man and society? You see, why say just produce orderly living? Let's put it that way.
Yes, orderly living.
In what sense is that not enough? You see, you feel it's very small, but
I mean, what? Because we live in chaos, to bring order, we think that's a tremendous effect.
Yes, that's agreed, right? It looks very big. From the present state of disorder, yeah, it looks very big.
Very enormous, but in itself it isn't.
Yes, could you make it a little more clear why it isn't?
Oh, yeah.
No, I think it's important not to...
All right, sir. All right. Because I can put my room in order. So that it gives me certain space, certain freedom. And I know where things are. I can go directly to them. That's a physical thing. Can I, as a human being, put things in myself in order, which is not to have conflict, not to have comparison, not to have any sense of me and you and they and you know, all that, which brings about such division, and out of that division grows conflict. That's simple.
Yeah.
If I'm a Hindu, and you are a Muslim, and we are eternally at war with each other.
Yes, yeah, so, and in every community, people fall apart in the same way.
Yeah, in the same way. Whole society breaks up then.
Yeah.
So that is, if one understands that, and profoundly has... realizes it, that's it, finished.
Yes, now, then suppose we say we have achieved that, then what?
That's what I want to get on.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're interested in that.
You see, I think some people might say it's so far away that it doesn't interest us. Wait till we achieve it before
right,
we worry about the other.
No, but you and I, this was a dialogue between you and me,
yeah.
Not with...
No, but I meant just for the sake of trying to make sure everybody here sees, before we go on, to see what the question is.
All right, so let's start. I'm in disorder. Physically, psychologically, and around me, the society in which I live is also utterly confused. There is a great deal of injustice and miserable affair. And I can see that very simply. I can see my generation, past generations and generations have contributed to this. And I can do something about it. That's simple. I can say, well, I put my house in order. Myself is the house.
Mm-hmm.
My house must be in order before I can move further.
Yeah. Well, would you say that this question, suppose somebody says my house is not in order, so before I worry about that,
my house is in disorder.
Yeah.
Let me put that into order, which is fairly simple. If I apply my mind and my heart to the resolution of that, of that question, it's fairly clear. But we don't want to do that.
Well, that's another question.
Yeah. We find it tremendously difficult. We are so bound to the past or to our habits and to our attitudes, and we don't seem to have the energy, the courage, the vitality to move on.
Yes, well, that's what's not so, it doesn't seem to be so simple as what will produce that energy and courage, you know, what will change all this.
I think what will change all this, as we discussed at Ojai, is to have this insight into all this.
Yes, I think that really is the key point, that without insight, nothing can change.
Nothing can change.
So even if we try to bring order in daily life, without this much broader insight,
that's right,
into the very root of it or into the
that's right,
ground of it.
Now, is that insight... really alter my whole structure and nature of my being? That is the question. Uh-huh. Isn't it?
Yeah. Then it seems to me that, see, what was implied was that if we look at a rather small question like the order of daily life, it will not involve your whole being.
No, of course not.
And therefore the insight will be inadequate.
Yes. So what is insight? We discussed that mm-hmm. too, a great deal. And we talked about it gathering here and at San. But do we go through that?
Well, just sum it up, I think, too. I mean, because I think would make it more intelligible.
Could we start with being tied to something? Being tied to a belief, to a person, to an idea, to some habit, some experience, which inevitably must create disorder. Because being tied implies dependence, the escape from one's own loneliness, fear, and all that.
Yes.
Now, to have total insight into this attachment, which then, that very insight clears away all attachment.
Yes, I think we were saying that the self is the center of darkness. It could be considered to be like a center creating darkness in the minor clouds, and the insight penetrates that set and would dispel the cloud so that there would be clarity, and therefore this problem would vanish.
Vanish, that's right.
But it would take a very strong, intense insight. A very,
yes, but that means...
Total.
That's right, but... Are we willing to go through that? Or my attachment to or my tie to something is so strong that I'm unwilling to let go.
Yes, but then what? Then what?
And that's what most people are.
Yeah.
It's only, I think, unfortunately, it's only very few who want to do this kind of thing.
Yes.
Now, we are discussing the nature of insight, whether that insight can wipe away or banish, dissolve this whole movement of being tied, attached, dependence, loneliness, all that, with one blow, as it were. I think it can. I think it does when there is profound insight into this thing. That insight is not mere memory, the movement of memory, knowledge, experience, which is totally different from all that movement.
Yes, well, it seems that it's insight into the whole of disorder, into the source of disorder.
Yes.
Of all disorder, psychological nature, not just, say, attachment or greed. Or
yes, yes, all that.
Yes, so that with that insight, then the mind can clear up, and then it would be possible to approach the cosmic order. That's
what I want to get at.
Yes.
That's much more interesting than this. Because this is all rather immature. Sorry, you forgive the word. It is, any serious man must put his house in order. Right? And that must be complete order. Not order in a particular direction, but order in the wholeness of man. If that can be done, and if that is necessary, because society as it is disintegrating and is destructive and all the rest of it, and it destroys human beings. It's a machine that is destructive in itself. Mm-hmm. And if a human being is caught in it, it destroys him.
Yes.
Right. And realizing that, any ordinary human intelligence says, I must do something about it. Not just sit back and talk about it.
Yes, well, just to finish the thing, I see most people might feel doing something about it consists of, say, solving particular problems like attachment or removing disagreements between people or something, you see.
No, the particular resolution of the particular problem and its resolution is not the resolution of the whole.
Yes, so that's the key point, that if you find the source, which generates this whole, then getting at this source, at this root,
yes,
is the only way.
That's right.
Because if we try to deal with the particular problem, it's still always coming from the source.
The source is the me, understood.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The source, apart from the great source, the little source, the little pond, the little stream, must dry up.
Yes. Well, the little stream confuses itself with the great one, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, we're not talking the great stream.
Yeah.
The immense movement of life. We're not that. We are talking about the little me with little movement, with little apprehensions and so on, so on. That is creating disorder. And as long as there is that center, which is the very essence of disorder, unless that is dissolved, there is no order. So at that level, it's clear.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're all like this. Can we go on from there?
Yes, I think so.
Now, I'd like to ask, is there another order totally different from this? This is man-made disorder, and therefore man-made order.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes, both.
Both. It's the chaos and the cosmos is man-made.
Well, not the real cosmos.
Cosmos is, no. Yeah. No, the real thing.
I mean,
thing,
the
no.
order which we see in the room, the microphone, see the television is man-made, which is a high degree of order, and also we see all the fighting going on.
Is man-made. And
man-made, the terrible programs put on this orderly television system.
Yes. Yeah. So after realizing that, seeing this order, which human mind can bring about in itself order, then it begins to ask, is there an order which is totally different, of a dimension which is necessary to find? Because this is so small affair.
Yes.
I put my house in order. All right. Then what? And if perhaps many of us do it, we'll have a better society, better, etc., etc. But yes, that is admitted, that is relevant, that is necessary. But that has its limitation.
Mm. Yes, eventually people won't be able to be satisfied with that.
No,
they'll get bored with
it. I'm not the one who is not.
Although it's, as you say, we have to have it.
Yes. Now, how does a human being who has really deeply understood this order made by human beings, and therefore affecting society and all that, he says, is there an order that's beyond all this?
Yes, and how do we get into that question?
Yeah, how do we get? I mean, human mind isn't satisfied merely having physical, social order. It has its limitations. Hmm? It has its boundaries. Mm-hmm. And says, yes, I understood all that. Let's move.
Yes, well, even, say, in science, men are seeking the order of the whole universe, looking to the what they feel to be the end or the beginning.
Yes.
Or to the depth of its structure. Not in order to get useful results, but because the question fascinates them.
Yeah, and this is not a fascinating question.
No, but I'm saying it does. It interests them, let's put it there.
Yes.
And I think perhaps I was thinking that men have been seeking the absolute. And the word absolute means to be free of all limitation, of all dependence, of all imperfection.
Yeah, of all motives and all the rest of it.
Yes. And
absolute.
So the absolute has been the source of tremendous illusion, of course, because the limited self seeks to capture the absolute.
Of course. I mean, that's impossible.
But that's the common...
Of course.
But supposing we recognize that the absolute is a very dangerous concept when the mind tries to grasp it, and yet it seems to be, in some sense, what is necessary, you see, that in the sense of freedom, that there could have been, freedom could only mean the same as absolute, you see.
Yes, yes.
Because anything which is dependent in any way is not free.
So how do we approach this? Hmm. How do we answer this question? As a scientist, would you say there is an order which is beyond all human order and disorder?
Yes, well, I would say it. I don't think that a scientist is particularly significant in the sense that science has not, maybe seeking this sort of thing, but it really has no more to say on it. It is not able to say anything on this question because any order discovered by science is relative.
Of course, because their own egotism comes
in. Well, not only that, but also the information we have is limited.
Limited, quite.
And we can only say it goes
so
far.
So are we moving to a world of either illusion, because demanding it, mm-hmm. may create illusion.
I feel it does create illusion that if man demands the absolute and tries to satisfy it in thought,
of course,
it's illusion.
But not I'm not asking that question from that point of view.
But not knowing what to do, men have felt the need for the absolute, and then not knowing how to get it, they have created the illusion of it in religion and in science or in many other ways.
So what shall I do? As a human being, who is the totality of human beings, there is order in my life. That order is naturally brought about through insight, and so perhaps will affect society. That we move from that. And the inquiry then is there an order which is not man-made?
Yes.
Let's put it that way. I won't even call it absolute order or any kind of...
Well, at least it's free of man's construction.
Yes.
Now that we have the order of nature, the cosmos, which we don't really know in its depth, but we could consider that to be that sort of order.
I mean, the very word cosmos means order.
Yes, it's the Greek word for order.
Yes.
As opposed
nature is an order.
Yes.
Unless man interferes with it, nature is an order.
Yes, well, nature...
has its own order, we won't say...
Yes, it has its own order, and even what we call disorder in nature is part of the order.
Part of the order.
It's not really disorder.
No. We call it disorder, but in itself it's not a disorder. All right. Finish with that. Hmm. Now, let's move to something else. Man has sought a different dimension, and perhaps use the word order. He has sought different dimension because he has understood this dimension. He has lived in it, he has suffered in it, he has gone through all kinds of mess and misery. He says, I've come to the end of all that. I mean, not verbally, actually come to the end of all that. And you may say that very few people do that, but this question must be put.
Yes, I could ask, what is the significance of this question to, say, the vast number of people who have not gone through that?
I don't quite follow.
Well, you see, we're putting this question. You say the man who has gone through that may put this question, right? But then, is it of any interest to the one who hasn't gone through it?
Yeah, I think it is.
Well, what is it?
Because he sees, even intellectually, he may see the limitations of it.
Yes, it's important for him to see. Even before he has finished up with it, it's important to see this point.
See, right?
Not to say, wait until I clear it
all
up. Yeah,
of course not. I mean, that would be too stupid. So, how does the mind approach this problem? I think man has struggled to find this out, sir. I mean, all religious people, you know, so-called religious people, have attempted to grasp this. The mystics, the saints with their illusions, all the rest of it. But they have tried to understand something which is not all this. Does it come about through, if I may use the word, meditation as measure?
Yes, well, we discussed that here in Brockwood, that the original meaning of the word meditation is to measure, to ponder, to weigh the value and significance.
Of course. Weigh means to measure.
Yes, and I think meditation would mean to measure in some deeper sense than just with a ruler. But
No, of course.
But even so, perhaps that may have been meant that such a measurement would only have significance for seeing that there is disorder. That's
what I would say. Yeah. Measurements exists only where there is disorder.
Yes, and but that by looking at the measurement, at the way things are out of proportion in the mind, you can see there is disorder, right?
Yes, yes.
But that is not the order, of course.
No. We are using the word meditation not as measure, or even to ponder or think over, but a meditation that is. That's the outcome of having kept bringing about order in the house and moving from there.
Right. So, say we can. That people may have used the word meditation in the distant past to indicate that by looking at measure you can see disorder as being out of proportion, but they may have meant to go on from there.
Yeah, but they don't seem to somehow.
Well, at least people don't generally do it. But
yeah, let's try to do it.
Yeah.
Rather. Perhaps a preposterous statement, but let's see.
So, see, if we see that things are in disorder in the mind, then what is meditation?
But first, mind must be free of measurement.
Yes.
Otherwise, I can't enter into the other.
Well, that's an important point to say that almost the instinctive reaction of seeing this disorder, this disorder is itself a disproportionate measurement, and therefore the instinctive tendency is to try to make the measure come right, to correct it.
Correct it, quite.
And that may be the fundamental mistake.
We said that.
Yeah.
We said it. I mean, all effort to bring order into disorder is disorder.
Yes, and that way this is very different from what almost everybody has been saying.
Yes.
Over the whole history.
History, I know. We are except.
Well, maybe there are a few who have implied it, I think that it's implicit in what a few have said, but it's never been said explicitly to my knowledge.
All right, let's explicitly say it.
So we say that, that's the attempt to control, as you've said, is wrong. You see that it has no meaning.
Right? No meaning, yes.
And now we say there's no control, what do we do?
No. Mm-hmm. If I have an insight into the whole nature of control.
Control is measure, you see.
Of course, control is measure.
Mm-hmm.
That liberates the mind from that burden.
Yes. Well, could you sort of explain the nature of this insight, what it means?
We said that. Insight implies it is not a movement from knowledge, from thought, and therefore remembrance and all the rest of it, but the cessation of all that and to look at it, look at the problem with pure observation, without any pressure, without any motive, all that, to observe this whole movement of measurement.
Yes, I think we can see that measurement is the same as becoming and
all that.
The attempt of the mind to measure itself, to control itself, to set itself a goal and
compare itself, all the rest of it, yes.
Is the very source of the disorder.
That is the very source of disorder.
And in a way, that was the wrong turning, a way of looking at this wrong turning, that man extended measurement from the external sphere into the mind.
Yes.
Now, now we say, I think the first reaction would be if we don't control this thing, it'll go wild, That's what somebody might fear.
Yeah, but if I have an insight into measurement, that very insight not only banishes all movement of measurement, there is a different order there.
Yes, it does not go wild.
Because it
has begun in
on
order.
On the contrary.
Yeah. That it's really the attempt to measure it which makes it go wild.
That's right. The measurement is wild.
Yeah.
Is confusion. Right? Now, let's proceed after establishing all this. Can this mind, through meditation, perhaps we are using the word meditation without any sense of measurement, comparison and all the rest of it, can that mind find an order, a state where there is no where there is something which is not man-made? Because one has been through all the man-made things, right? And there are all limitations. There is no freedom. There is chaos. There is mess. And
well, what
that.
Would you say? When you say you've been through man-made things, what are they? When you say you've been through man-made things, what are they?
Oh, everything.
What do you mean? Well, like religion?
Like religion, science, worship, prayers, anxiety, sorrow, attachment, detachment, and loneliness, and suffering, and confusion, and ache, and anxiety, loneliness, all that.
And it's also all the attempts to, by revolution and by...
Of course, physical revolution, psychological revolution, all that. Those are all man-made. And so many people have put this question, obviously must have. And therefore they say God.
Yes.
Which is another concept, and that very concept creates disorder.
Yes, well that's clear that man has invented God and given him the power of the absolute.
Yes, quite.
Which is himself.
Which then becomes himself.
Yes, and therefore it becomes the
chaotic.
It dominates him.
Yes, of course. Now, one has finished all that. Right?
Right.
Now, what? Then the question is there something beyond all this, which is never touched by the human thought, mind?
Yes, now that makes a difficult point. Not touched by the human mind, right?
Yeah.
But mind might go beyond thought. I mean, the word mind might...
That's what I mean, yes.
I mean, then what do you mean? You see, do you mean by the mind only thought, feeling, desire, and will, or something much more?
No, that's for the time being. We have said the mind, human mind, is all that.
But it's not the... The mind is now considered to be limited.
No, no. As long as the human mind is caught in that, it is limited.
Yes, the human mind has potential.
Tremendous potential.
But it is not realized now. It is caught in thought, feeling, desire,
that's
and will,
right.
And
that's
that sort of thing. Right?
Yeah.
All right, so then we will say that which is beyond this is not touched by this limited sort of mind, right?
Yes.
Now, what will we mean by the mind which is beyond this limit?
Now, first of all, sir, is there such a mind?
Yes, that's the first question.
Is there such a mind that is actually, not theoretically or romantically, all the rest of that nonsense, actually said, I've been through this?
You mean you've been through the limited stuff?
Yeah, yeah. And being through it means finish with it. Can that, is there such a mind? Or because it has finished with it, or it thinks it has finished with it, therefore creates the illusion that there is something else.
Yeah.
I won't accept that. As a human being, one person or X says, I've understood this, I've seen the limitation of all this, I've lived through it, and I've come to the end of it. And this mind, having come to the end of it, is no longer the limited mind. And is there a mind which is not, which is totally limitless?
Yes.
You follow what I mean?
Yes. Yes, now that raises a question, you see, of how the brain is able to be in contact with that mind, you know. What is the relation between that unlimited mind and the brain?
First of all, I want to be clear on this point. It's rather interesting if we go into it. This mind, brain, the whole of it, the whole nature and the structure of the mind, includes the emotions, the brain, the reactions, the physical responses and all that. This mind has lived in turmoil, in chaos, in loneliness, and has had a profound insight into all that. And having such a deep insight, cleared the field.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So this mind is no longer that mind.
Yes, it's no longer the original limited mind.
The no longer the limited mind.
That you began with.
Damaged mind, right.
Yes.
Let's use the word damaged mind.
Damaged mind, also damaged brain, you say. That this damaged mind has been the same, working as damaged the brain, right?
Yes, all right.
So we have
all
both
right.
The damaged mind and
damaged
the damaged
mind
brain.
Means damaged emotions, damaged brain.
The cells themselves are not in the right order. Right?
Not quite. But when there is this insight, and therefore order, the damage is undone.
Yes, we discussed that in the previous time.
Previous time. I don't know if you agree to that.
Yes, well, I see it. Certainly, you see it's possible. You see, by reasoning, you can see it's quite possible because you can say the damage was done by disorderly thoughts and feelings, which overexcite the cells and disrupt them. And now, with the insight, that stops, and a new process
is set up. Like a person going for 50 years in a certain direction, mm-hmm. and realizes suddenly that's not the direction.
Yes.
The whole brain changes.
It changes at the core, and then the wrong structure is dismantled and healed.
Yeah.
That may take time,
that's
you said,
right.
But the insight which...
is the factor that changes.
Which, yes, and that insight does not take time.
Time, that's right.
But it means that the whole process has changed at the origin.
Now, again, that mind... The limited mind, with all its with its consciousness and its content, all the rest of it, says, "I've been through. It's over that part." Now, is that mind, which has been limited, and having had insight into this limitation, and therefore moved away from that limitation. Is that an actuality as something that is really tremendously revolutionary? You follow what I mean? And therefore it is no longer the human mind. Forgive me for using that word.
Well, that requires, I think we should clear that up, that what we mean by the human mind.
Mind, which is the... with its consciousness, which is limited.
Yeah, that limited consciousness, which is conditioned and not free.
That is ending.
Yes, that is... and that is the general consciousness, which has been the case. I mean, not just in individuals, but it has been all around.
All, of course. Not. I'm not talking of an individual. That's too silly.
Yes, I think we discussed that the individual is the outcome of the general consciousness.
Yes.
A particular outcome, rather than an independent thing. You see, that's one of the difficulties.
That's one of the confusions.
The confusions is we take the individual mind to be the concrete actuality.
Yes.
Whereas we've been discussing, it's necessary to consider this general mind to be the actuality from which the individual mind is formed.
Yes. Yes, and that's all very clear.
And now you're saying, but now we say we move away even from that general mind.
Yes,
but
general,
what does it mean?
And the particular mind.
And the particular mind.
Now, if one has totally moved away from it, then what is the mind?
Yes, and what is the person? What is the human being, right?
Yeah, what is a human being then?
Yeah.
And what is the relationship between that mind, which is not man-made mind, and the man-made mind?
Yes.
I don't know if I'm making myself.
Yes,
clear.
Well, we had that. This did we agree to call it a universal mind, or would you prefer not to? It is not.
Like that word, universal mind. Lots of people used it.
Yes.
Let's use a much simpler word.
Well, it's the mind which was not made by man.
Man. I think that's simpler. You keep it to man.
And
the mind which is not made by man.
Neither individually nor in general.
Generally or individually, is not made by man. Is that so? I mean, can one observe really deeply without any more prejudice and all the rest? Does such a mind exist? You follow what I'm trying to say?
Yes, now what? Let's see what that means to observe that. You see, I think there's some difficulties of language here. Because, we say one must, a person, or one must observe and things like that, whereas...
I observe it.
Yes.
I observe...
Yeah, no, what? Who observes? You see, that's one of the problems
simply,
that comes up.
That's been through all that.
Yeah.
There is no division in observation.
Mm-hmm.
Not I observe, but there is only observation.
Observation takes place.
Yes.
Would you say it takes place in a particular brain, for example, or a particular brain takes part in the observation... See, because, let's say...
I know that you're catching this.
Hmm.
No, sir. It doesn't take in a particular brain.
Yes, but it seems that a particular brain may respond, you see.
Of course, but it's not case brain.
I don't mean that. I mean, what I mean by the word particular brain is, you see, we could say that given the particulars of where a certain human being is in space and time or whatever his form is, not giving him a name, is distinguished from another one which might be there.
Look, sir.
Yeah.
No, let's get clear this point. We live in man-made world, man-made mind, man-made and all this. We are the result of man-made mind. Our brains and so on. Brain with all its responses and not the actual...
The brain itself is not man-made, but it has been conditioned.
Conditioned by man.
Man-made conditioning.
Right, that's what I mean. Now, can that mind uncondition itself so completely that it's no longer man-made?
Yes, the question, yes.
That is the question. Let's keep it to that simple level.
Well,
Can that mind, man-made mind as it is now, can it go to that extent to so completely liberate itself from itself?
Yes, of course, that's a somewhat paradoxical statement.
Of course. No, paradoxical, but it's actually so. I mean, I can see. Wait, let's begin again.
Mm-hmm.
One can observe the consciousness of humanity is its content.
Mm.
And its content is all the man-made things. Anxiety, fear, and all the rest of it. And it is not only particular, it's the general.
Yeah.
Having had an insight into this,
mm-hmm.
it has cleansed itself of that.
Well, that implies that it was always potentially more than that, but that insight enabled to be free of that. Is that what you're...
That insight, I won't say it is potential.
Yes, you see... there's a little... difficulty of language, that if you say the brain or the mind had an insight into its own conditioning, and
then
it's almost you're saying it became something else, you see, that's
I'm saying that.
Yes.
I'm saying that.
Right, okay.
The insight transforms the man-made mind.
Yes. So that it's... But then you say it's no longer the man-made mind.
It's no longer. That insight... means the wiping away of all the content of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Not bit by bit by bit, the totality of
mm-hmm.
it. And that insight is not the result of man's endeavor.
Yes, but then that seems to raise the question, where does it come from?
All right. Where does it come from? Yes. In the brain itself, in the mind itself.
Well, which, the brain or the mind?
I know mind. I'm talking mind, yeah. The whole of it.
But we say there's mind, right?
Just a minute, sir. Let's go slowly. It's rather interesting. Let's go slowly. The consciousness is man-made, general and particular. And logically, reasonably, one sees the limitations of it. Then the mind is gone much further. Then it comes to a point when it says, can all this be wiped away at one breath, one blow, one movement? And that movement is insight, the movement of insight. Mm-hmm. It is still in the mind,
yes,
but not of born out of that consciousness.
Yes,
I don't know if I'm making. Yeah.
But then we're saying the mind has the possibility or potential of being,
yes,
moving from beyond,
yeah,
the consciousness,
yes,
but we haven't actually done much of it.
Yes, that's right. Of course, it must be a part of the brain,
yeah,
part of the mind.
The brain mind can do that.
Yes,
but it hasn't generally done it.
Yes. Now, having done all this, mm-hmm, is there a mind which is not only man-made, which is man cannot conceive, cannot create, it is not an illusion. Is there such a mind? I don't know if I'm making my clear.
Well, I think what you're saying is having freed itself, the mind has...
Generally in particular.
Freed from the general and particular structure of consciousness of mankind, from its limits. And now this mind is now much greater. And now you say,
Is this mind is raising a question.
Which is what?
Which is... First, is that mind free from the man-made mind?
Yes.
That's the first question.
Yeah, it may be an illusion.
Illusion. That's what I want to be when I speak very clear. Mm-hmm. No, it is not an illusion. I mean, mm-hmm, because he says measurement is illusion. Mm-hmm. He knows the nature of illusions, born of wherever there is desire, there must be, etc., etc., illusions. Mm-hmm. And illusions must create limitation, and so on. He's not only understood it, he's over.
He's free of desire.
Yeah, free of desire. That is the nature. I don't want to put it so brutally. Free of desire.
But it's full of energy.
Yes. Now, this mind, which is no longer general and the particular, and therefore not limited, and this limitation has been broken down through insight, and therefore the mind is no longer that, a conditioned mind, right?
Yeah.
Now, then what is that mind? Being aware that it's no longer caught in illusion.
Yes, but we're saying it was raising the question,
yes,
about whether there is some much greater...
Yeah, that's why I'm raising that question.
Whatever.
Yeah. Is there a mind which is not man-made?
Mm-hmm.
And if there is, what is its relationship to the man-made mind?
Yes.
It is very difficult. You're supposed to go on?
Well, if you feel up.
Oh, I can go on. It's fun. We go up quarter to one.
Quarter to one, is that good, yes.
See, every form of assertion, every form of verbal statement is not that, right? So we're asking, is there a mind which is not man-made? And I think that can only be asked when the other, when the limitations are ended.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's just a foolish question.
Well, it'll be the same.
I mean, just a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that becomes theoretical nonsense.
Well, it's a part of the man-made structure.
Of course, of course. So one must be absolute, I mean, I'm using the word, one must be...
I think the word absolute can be used, if we're very careful.
Yeah, very carefully, yes. Absolutely free of all this. Then only you can put that question. When you put that question, not you, when that question is raised, is there a mind that is not man-made? And if there is such a mind, what is its relationship to the man-made mind? Now, is there such a mind first? Of course, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Without being dogmatic or personal or all that business, there is. But she's not God.
Right, well.
Because God, we've been through that.
Yeah, part of the man-made structure.
Yeah. Which has created chaos in the world. There is. Then, the next question is, what is, if there is such a mind, and someone says there is, then what is the relationship of that to the human mind?
Yes, to the man-made
mind.
Yeah, to the general.
Particular and general. Has it any relationship?
Yes, well... You see, the question is a difficult one because you could say that the man-made mind is pervaded with the illusion. No, it's not most of its content is not real.
No, so this is real.
Yes.
We'll use the word real in the sense actual.
Yes.
And that is measurable, confused. What is this? What is it? Has this relationship to that? Obviously not.
Well, I would say a superficial one in the sense that the man-made mind has some real content in a certain level, the technical level of, say, the television system and so on. Yeah, but, so in that sense, in that area, there could be a relationship, but as you're saying, that is a very small area. But fundamentally...
No, as we discussed, remember, sir, the man-made mind has no relationship to that.
Yes.
But that has a relationship to this.
Yes, but not to the illusions in the man-made mind.
Wait a minute. Let's be clear.
Yeah.
My mind is the human mind.
Mm-hmm.
It has got illusions, desires, and all the rest of it. And there is the other mind, which is not... which has no, which is beyond all limitation. This illusory mind, the man-made mind, is always seeking that.
Yes, that's its main trouble.
Yeah, that's its main trouble. It is measuring it, it is advancing, it's am I getting nearer, farther, all the rest of it. And this mind, the human mind, the mind that's made by human beings, human mind, the mind, man-made mind, is always seeking that. And therefore it's creating more and more mischief, confusion. This man-made mind has no relationship to that.
Yes, because from...
Obvious.
Any attempt to get that is the source of illusion.
Absolutely obvious. Now, has that any relationship to this?
Well, what I was suggesting was that it would have to have... See, that if we take the illusions which are in that mind, you know, such as desire and fear and so on, it has no relationship to that.
No.
Because they're figments anyways.
Yes, I understood.
Now, but to have a but that can have a relationship to the man-made mind if in understanding its true structure. I mean,
are you saying, sir, that mind has a relationship to the human mind? The moment is moving away from it, from the limitation.
Yes, but in understanding those limitations,
yes,
it moves away.
Moves away. Then it has, that has a relationship.
Then it has a genuine relationship, yes, to what that other mind, to what this limited mind actually is. Right?
Yes.
Not to what it, not to the illusions as to what it thinks it is.
Right? Let's be clear.
Well, that the we have to get the words right. That the mind which is not limited, right, which is not man-made, cannot be related to the illusions which are in the man-made mind, but it has to be related to, as it were, to the source of the illusion, to the real nature of the man-made mind, which is behind the illusion. Right?
Which is the man-made mind is based on what?
Well, on all these things we said.
Yes, which is its nature.
Yes.
Therefore, how can that have a relationship to this? Even basically.
The only relationship is in understanding it, and so some communication would be possible. We're saying which might communicate to the other person.
No, I'm questioning that.
Yes, because you were saying that the mind which is not man-made may be related to the limited mind, and not the other way around. Right?
I even question that.
Yes, all right. No, it's changing that.
Yeah.
I'm
just pushing it here.
Yes, yeah, so it may or may not be so, is what you're saying, by questioning it.
Yeah, I'm questioning it.
Okay.
What is the relationship, then, of love to jealousy? It has none.
Not to jealousy itself, no, which is an illusion, but to the human being who is jealous, there may be.
No, I'm taking love.
Yeah.
And hatred.
Two
words, love and hatred. Love or hatred have no relationship to each other.
No, not really.
No, none. I mean, not really.
Except,
or
I think that love might understand the origin of hatred, you see.
Yes.
In that sense, I would think of a relationship.
I see you're using, I understand. You're saying love can understand the origin of hatred.
Yeah.
And how the hatred arises and all the rest of it.
Yes.
Is that so? Does love understand that?
Well, I think in some sense that it understands its origin in the man-made mind, you see, that that having seen the man-made mind and all its structure and moved away.
So are we saying, sir, that love, we're using the full word for the moment, that love has relationship to non-love?
Only in the sense of dissolving it.
I'm not sure. We must be awfully careful here. Or the ending of itself...
Mm-hmm. Which is itself?
An ending of hatred.
Yeah.
The other is.
Yeah.
Not the other has a relationship to the understanding of hatred.
Yes, well, we have to ask how it gets started then. You see that...
That's very simple.
No, but I mean suppose we say we have hatred, right?
I have hatred. Suppose,
yes.
I have hatred. I can see the origin of it. Because you've insulted me.
No, what I don't, but that's a superficial notion of the origin. I mean, to say why does one behave so irrationally, you see, is the deeper origin. See, there's no real, if you merely say you have insulted me, then I say, why should you respond to the insult?
Because all my conditioning is that.
Yes, well, that's what I mean by it. Then you're understanding the origin of
I understand that. But does love help me to understand the origin of hatred?
No, but I think that someone in hatred, understanding this origin and moving away.
Moving away?
Yes.
Then the other is?
Yes.
The other cannot help the movement away?
No. But the question is, suppose one person, if we want to put it that way, one human being has this love and the other has not, right?
Mm-hmm.
And can the first one communicate something which will start the movement in the second one?
That means that number A can influence B.
Well, not influence, but simply to... what could raise the question, for example, why should anybody be talking about any of this? You see, why should I talk about it?
That's a different matter.
Yeah.
No, but the question says, which is hate dispelled by love?
No, not that, no.
Huh? Or the understanding of hatred and the ending of it, the other is?
That's right. But now, if we say that here in A, the other now is, right?
Huh?
A has reached that. The other is. Love is for A. And he sees B, C, D.
B is got the other.
Yeah. Now, when we're saying, what is he going to do? You see, that's the...
What is the relationship between the
two?
That's
the same question. I
mean, same
when
question,
you say what is he going to do is another way of putting it, right?
I think we're... Just a minute, sir. I hate, another loves. My wife loves and I hate. She can talk to me.
Yes.
She can point it out to me. The unreasonable and so on, so on, so on. But her love is not going to transform the source of my hatred.
Oh, that's clear, yes. Except the love is the energy which will be behind the talk, I see.
Behind the talk.
It will not, the love itself doesn't sort of go
of
in
course,
there and dissolve the hate.
That's because romantic and all that business.
Yes.
So the man who hates, that the source of it, the cause of it, the movement of it, having an insight and the ending it as the other.
Yes, but I think, let's say, if we say A is the man who has seen all this and he now has the energy to put it to B, it's up to B what happens.
Of course, of course, of course. I think we better pursue this.
Right.
Huh? Course to one.
The Immeasurable Podcast is a project of the Krishnamurti Center, funded by the Krishnamurti Foundation of America. For information on our online community, programs, and how to support this work, please visit kfa.org.